Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. On today's show, we have actress Rebecca Ramone talking about her role in the new horror film and YouTube satire, The 16th Episode. Also, we'll be re-airing an interview with horror director Darren Lynn Bousman about his film, Saint Agatha. That's all coming up on Endeavors. My first guest has worked as an actress, a cinematographer, producer, a director, an editor, and an assistant camera person. She was an actress in the short film The Violet Blaze Chronicles and directed and was the cinematographer and producer on the short film Housing Skid Row, in which she was also the editor, and she's also been editor on such films as Within Jealousy, Heavenly Father, and Girls on Drugs, which are all short films. And she's worked on the short films Switching Sides, The Revengers, Twisting Fate, and Footprints on Sand. She made her acting feature film debut in the horror satire film The 16th Episode, which follows three YouTubers struggling to get more views on their adventure channel, travel to the mythical city of Casablanca, unaware that it hides a terrifying secret, and realize that maybe the thing their fans want to see most is for them to die. One of the stars of the film is Rebecca Ramone, playing the role of Helen, and I spoke with her a couple of weeks back about the project. Rebecca Ramone, hello, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Ah, so you are part of this new film, the 16th episode, which sort
That's
of
right.
follows a little bit of horror, a little bit of comedy. I think it's sort of a social commentary about three YouTubers. How did you get involved in this specific project?
I've always wanted to be a filmmaker. I've always wanted to be an actor as a child. Grew up, became a little more practical, went to film school, decided, I wanted to be an editor so that I had something to fall back on. But in the past few years, I really wanted to, put my focus on acting. And when I was seeking work, I was using Backstage, and I came across this synopsis, and I read it, and I really liked that. I reached out to Jerome Cohen Oliver, and he sent me the script, and I loved it. I fell in love right away. It resonated with the character Helen resonated with me. The theme of the story was amazing, and the sole reason I've ever wanted to become a filmmaker was because the mode of communication that I use to tell people what I think and I feel. And I thought that the social commentary that's involved in this film was something that I wanted to be involved with because it was done so well. And Jerome Cohen Oliver's amazing when it comes to telling stories visually, and that's what film is to me: visual storytelling that moves people. And so I auditioned for Jerome Cohen Oliver using a self tape through Backstage, and he just wanted to be very clear, that I understood the theme and the content, and was comfortable playing that role, and I was, because I believe that this film, that everyone should see this film. I think it's amazing that we're using the horror genre to share such a meaningful message. Our society really puts a lot of importance on likes and comments on their Instagram or their Facebook, and YouTubers that, they want to get their views on YouTube. And you see that in this movie. And then you see the character lose who they are. And I think that happens in real life. I think that when we're in the middle of creating a world, we often forget about what's going on around us in our own world. And you see that in this film. And I think that that's a really important a very important message to get across to society, because I feel like we're losing society and connecting with people in real life, and that's why.
Your character, as well as Mark and Einar, are all YouTube filmmakers, and you always hear this term, YouTubers, vloggers, social media influencers, and people make millions of dollars just doing these on these microsites. In your research for this role, I don't know if you did any, but did you figure out what makes a good YouTuber? What makes a successful vlogger?
Well, actually, no. I went off of my own project that I was creating at the time. I actually was creating web series that I wanted to used to culminate into a feature length documentary. So I was putting them up on YouTube. So I was basing it on my own experience. One of my last interviews, I just called myself a YouTuber, but I don't technically call myself a YouTuber. I was just using that format as a way to get my media out there. And so I based a lot of that on my own experience with being a content creator.
This is also a horror film, but it's satire. And you sort of alluded to earlier, 50s and 60s and 70s, horror was very good at social commentary. And then we got into them where it was just like slasher and torture porn and as gory as you can get. And now we're sort of seeing a resurgence of the original idea of horror films. What do you think it is about that genre? What are they able to do, and how are they able to tell stories in ways other types of films can't?
I really don't think that the message, like the one that the themes that we see in here, they're just not that interesting. I don't know how. You do see some comedy in our film, and that's great because it's blended. I don't think that you could produce a strictly comedy film and still still be as poignant as I believe that Jerome Colton Oliver was able to do in this type of genre. Really, just simply because it is scary, and I think people want to watch films that are scary, but also have an underlying message, which you never could get with torture porn or the slasher film. And people want that. People want, I think, meaningful stories to be told. And I think comedy is a genre that you can also tell very serious stories with, don't get me wrong, because I think that's a really great genre to do that in. But it's entertaining in the horror genre as well. We had a lot of fun doing what we did and exploring these characters and losing ourselves in the story in this way, and still were able to definitely execute telling an important message.
Demonic possession is a plot device and trope that's always been around, and we've seen it work in films like The Exorcist, and then there are other films where it maybe hasn't worked as well, and I think it does work in your film. But what is it about maybe like that specific plot line, that specific trope that people keep coming back to, and why do you think it can work so well in films?
I think people believe in possession, and I think they want to know what leads us there, and I think that possession can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but like being like having your whole life kind of flipped upside down because of some sort of inciting incident that happens in real life, and it happened in the story. So and I've seen people want to know why, how it happens, and I think in this film it's a very interesting way that it happened. And I don't know if you want to talk or get into that too much, but I think people want to know, is possession real, and how does it happen? And in this case, it was Helen's obsession with trying to create the successful project and being sidetracked and getting involved into something, temptation, basically, is what it was. She was tempted, and that lured her in. And I think that says a lot about the film. And I don't want to say too much and ruin it. I don't want to tell people what I think about the film. I want people to kind of take away with it and make of it what they want to, because I think it could be taken in a few different ways. And I want to leave that to the audience to decide for themselves. But I think people ultimately are looking for ways that people become possessed. And this definitely delivers one idea of how that might be.
The bulk of the film takes place in Casablanca. which the characters describe as almost a mythical place. And again, it's one of those places that you hear about. You know, of course, there was the famous film and places, you know, like the Prince of Persia. And it's one of these places that has a lot of ancient history and ancient culture behind it. What appealed to you about setting the film in a place such as that, that has all this behind it?
I thought it was super important because as for the idea that people are so disillusioned about what they think. I mean, I think when people think of Casablanca, Morocco, the only idea they really have of Casablanca is maybe the Casablanca movie that was shot in a studio. So it's not the real thing. And for me, it was important to like be there because I knew I was going to be exploring new land, which is what these characters do as YouTubers. So for me, it was like awesome. Not only does the character in the story immerse themselves into these worlds, we as actors are immersing ourselves into a completely different culture. And that added, I believe, to the realistic and organic flow of the whole film, which is why it's unique and everybody needs to see it because it definitely does. I mean, yeah, people can say that it's, you know, a found footage film, but it definitely bends that genre and brings a whole new element to the screen.
Did you guys actually get to shoot on location?
We did. We shot near the second largest mosque in the world, Hassan II, and we shot in various other locations, including the slums. There was a home location that we shot in, but it was all there in Casablanca. And originally we were supposed to shoot, I believe, outside of the famous Rick's Cafe there in Casablanca as well. We were unable to do that, but we did visit there, which was cool. And it was just a very beautiful experience. The people were so welcoming, and but it was frightening. And that is what I think definitely contributed to that realistic feeling of fright that's in the film. And that comes from the fact that we really like, hey, this is new to us. This whole world is new to this. I don't speak French. I don't speak Arabic. And I'm going here, and I'm surrounded by a whole new world of people in a different language. And so just getting accustomed to that culture while we were working was a very interesting, very, very interesting and fun experience for me.
I know Ben Kingsley expresses a deep fondness for Morocco. What was maybe one thing you took away from your experience there, either the country itself or the culture?
I thought it was interesting to see how the culture really seems to admire certain cultures of America, specifically fashion. I thought that was interesting, and but I thought it was cool at the same time because for some reason I just felt like, for me, and this is strictly just talking about fashion, I felt like I was in 93 all of a sudden, back in 1993, and, you know, just hanging out with the people there and the style and the music and their attitudes. And I feel like they're still trying to strive to this idea of maybe what America is supposed to be like, ideally, but isn't. but I also just love the people very much. So I can see where Ben Kingsley loves Morocco. I felt safer there than I do in America.
I
don't even speak their language.
Fair. You sort of alluded to the found footage aspect of this film, and I almost think it's kind of meta in that way because there are certain scenes where Mark and Einar are talking about the found footage genre, and then they find themselves in a found footage film while trying to make a found footage film. Do you like sort of meta humor and meta references?
Absolutely. I'm a queen of sarcasm. At least I used to be. And so much so that no matter how serious I try to be, even today, people have to often ask me, are you sarcastic? No, I'm not. But that is a big part of like who I am as a person. I'm a joker, you know? And so being able to blend that in there and us really take our real dynamic that we that we develop off set and bring it on set in an organic fashion was really, really fun for me. So, yeah, I definitely had fun with that.
We did talk about possession. As an actor, as you know, someone who inhabits different characters as a storyteller, what was your favorite part about being able to play possessed?
I got to be myself. I got to, I'm an empath, so you know, putting myself in certain around certain people and in, around certain environments, so that I can absorb that energy and allow it to affect me. And play with that and be safe knowing that it's just a film was great, because in the real world you're often pretty much criticized for, like, well, she's off the wall or this or that. No, I'm an actor and I'm an empath, and I believe that most of us are. So it feels great to be able to have a safe space to play and be yourself, and being able to be possessed was like a great way to do that.
And how was being covered in all that fake blood?
Oh, man. It was dreadful. It was going on for a week, and it was just like, it was amazing blood. The makeup artist that used it, she showed me her trick, and I can't tell you what it is, but it did involve some sugar, I will tell you that. But it was nasty and sticky and gross and yucky. But it was totally worth it, because, I mean, I love the work that we ended up doing together. And, I mean, I would love to do it again. I would really like to work with these guys again. It was a wonderful experience.
So sorry to interrupt, but we've got just about a minute and a half remaining. Thank you.
Okay, it's fine. All right. I was just going to say, you know, you clearly seem to be a fan of the horror type films. What are some horror films that you've seen recently that really, really resonated with you?
Oh, recently I can't say, but I love horror film. I grew up on it. My father is a big horror fan, and he really allowed all of us to watch it. So from the beginning of time, we were watching, you know, Children of the Corn, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. You know, we saw all the classics. Halloween. My ultimate favorite, because I love that they took nothing and made, I love how they were able to take nothing and make something of it. I mean, everybody coming together to work for free and something that they believe in, and here we are today, and I still love Halloween to this day. It's my favorite.
And finally, just as I was just gonna say, finally, because I know we gotta wrap up, you did say that a lot, you know, there are certain aspects of this film that are open to interpretation, but what do you want the audience seeing this to take away from it?
What do I want? I don't want to give my audience something to take away from it. I want them to have their own thoughts and interpret it in their own way, because I can definitely give an idea of what I think, how certain people could interpret specifically one scene and how Helen became possessed. But I also can see a different interpretation, and I'd really rather leave that up to the audience, and I'm actually looking forward to what they have to say about it.
Well, the film is the 16th episode, and it is in theaters on June the 28th, I do believe. Rebecca Ramon, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Cheers.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
That was my conversation with actress Rebecca Ramon. Her film, the 16th episode, is on video on demand now. Back in February, I got to speak with horror director Darren Lynn Bousman. You may know him from the director of the Saw franchise. He directed episodes 2, 3, and 4, as well as the film Repo, The Genetic Opera, and 11-11-11. He has a new film coming out entitled Saint Agatha. It's wonderfully creepy and all takes place in a nunnery. This is my conversation with director Darren Lynn Bousman. Okay. Darren Lynn Bousman, hello, welcome, thanks for being here today.
Of course, thanks for having me.
So you have a new film out, Saint Agatha. It's another great horror film that you always make good work. How did this project come to you? Was it the normal they sent you the script and you were interested, or was there another way?
No, actually, I was in the middle of another production, something called The Tension Experience. And The Tension Experience was an immersive theater production, very much like the game meets Westworld. And it was a real world, real life. You have to basically interact with the actors, and your choices dictate what happens to you. And in this, Sabrina Kern, who plays St. Agatha, was the lead of this production. And one afternoon I got home, and there was a book inside my bag that I didn't put there. And come to find out, the line producer snuck it into my bag and hoped I would read it. Well, I had nothing going on that night, so I actually read the script. And the next day I came in, and he was like, "Did you get the thing I left in your bag?" And I jokingly said, "I'll only do it if I can bring the entire cast of The Tension Experience with me." And I was only half joking, and they ended up hiring me for the movie and letting me bring Sabrina Kern, as well as a few other actors. Trin, who plays Paula, the girl who's strangled with the umbilical cord. Miles, who's the doctor. Bobby King, who's the grifter, who they like play the con on with the card thing. And a few others, the writer, Clint Sears. So they allowed me to kind of bring on my team. And so it was such a quick turnaround from when they gave me the script to when I would actually be shooting. I said yes, because a lot of times when you're in Hollywood, movies could take years. You read a script, and literally it could take years before you actually get to the point of actually filming it. So I said yes, and months later, Sabrina and I were there making the movie.
You mentioned that the length of time it can make it take. I sometimes find that horror films tend to happen and tend to develop quicker than maybe other types of films in Hollywood. Do you find that that's just due to budgetary issues that a lot of these types of films tend to happen at a bit of a quicker pace?
Yes and no. So, I mean, there have been horror movies that I have that take years and years and years and years to get made. The problem is with Hollywood, a lot of times people tell you they have something financed, and they absolutely do not have it financed. This was one of those things where they said, "Hey, the movie's fully financed. We're ready to do it immediately." They actually were. They actually were fully financed, and they actually were able to do it immediately. I mean, I think that with horror, why horror goes quicker is a lot of times the budgets on horror films are a lot less intense than some other movies. So, like for example, with this movie, this is a very, very, very low budget movie. So, I think that obviously helped to make it a quick turnaround.
And yet, it strikes me that some of the best films we see out there are ones that have lower budgets. Do you think having less money can enhance the creativity of a project?
Yes. Well, I mean, here's what I think it is. When you have less money, you're allowed to take more risks and do more things. Meaning, like, if you look at a movie like The Witch, I don't know if you saw The Witch, that was out a few years ago, or It Follows. These are movies that weren't, you know, they didn't have $100 million on the line. They had a couple million dollars on the line. And so when you do something like that, usually they give people more of a leeway to do weird things. Like, for example, this movie is a perfect example. Due to the budget, I was able to bring Sabrina Kern with me. Sabrina's never acted before. I mean, never been in a movie before. This is her first film. And on top of that, she's not even a native English speaker. She's from Switzerland. She's Swiss German. So the risk that they allowed me to bring who I wanted to onto this would never happen if I had $50 million or $100 million to make a movie.
You mentioned Sabrina and a couple of the cast members that you brought. One thing that struck me about this film was the majority of the leads are female. Was that something that also intrigued you, especially in this era, you know, of Me Too and the recent 4% pledge that was taken?
Well, it did. I mean, we made the movie 2 years ago. But I will tell you that I've always found females more interesting to watch. And I think that if you go back and look at my earlier work, from the Saw franchise to Repo to Mother's Day, they were all leads. The females were all leads. from Bahar to Shawnee Smith to Alexa Vega to Rebecca De Mornay. They've all been female leads. I did a TV series where I executive produced set in an all-girls school in Japan. I just find it more interesting. I jumped at the chance to do this. And I love pitting two strong females against each other. And again, it's something you'll notice if you go back and look at my films, Mother's Day, it was Jamie King versus Rebecca De Mornay. And this, it's Sabrina Kern versus Carolyn Hennessy. I think there's just something cool about that. Listen, I love action films and The Rock and all these as much as the next guy. But there's something just inherently badass about watching two strong females chew the scenery and go after each other.
Most, you know, people will know you mostly from your work in the horror genre. Of course, you mentioned Saw and Repo. What do you like specifically about the art of the horror film?
Well, I think that horror has the ability to get under your skin like no other genre can. You know, I feel like a broken record because I say this a lot, but I think it's so true that horror has a way to imprint itself on you and stay in your memory where other genres don't. So when I was growing up as a kid, I loved going to the movies. I went to the movies all the time. I don't remember where I was the first time I watched Short Circuit or Caddyshack 2 or Weekend at Bernie's, but I do know where I was when I saw Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th or Hellraiser, because those movies left an impression on me. And I think to me, that's why I love horror, is that, you know, you might not remember things about St. Agatha, but you'll remember a girl was strangled with an umbilical cord. When those moments happen, those shocking things, they stay with you. And so I've always found that for me as a person, horror has kind of, I don't know, some of my memories, my earliest memories come to being frightened or being scared. And I think that to me, that's just something that I love to push out there as well, is to create images and things in people's head that they will remember long past the credits roll.
It's interesting you mention that, because watching this film, it's one of the few times where I've actually been squeamish. I don't get squeamish that easily, and there was one scene where I sort of had to recoil in horror, so to speak. As a director, where do you find that line between sort of, you know, entertaining and telling a good story, and then having that shock value of what happens on camera?
Well, this is a much more reserved film than some of my others. You know, Saw was much more in-your-face and exploitative. Repo was much more in-your-face and flamboyant. I think this took a more reserved approach. Yes, there's violence in it. Yes, there's torture and sadistic things. But it's done in a much more subtle way, and it's more about characters. Now, I'll give you one example, and a spoiler for those listening to this. Close your ears for the next 15 seconds. You don't want to hear this. But there's a scene where the girl, Courtney Haverlson, throws up, and she is forced to eat her puke by Mother Superior. The old me would have shown the puke on the plate, would have done close-ups as the spoon hit it, would have done, you know, close-ups of the mouth as it tried to digest it. But in this, I'd much rather played it on the reactions of everyone watching it. And so I think that for me, it's got to service the story. And I think that I've kind of matured a little bit as a filmmaker in knowing what's important to show the audience and what to leave to their imagination.
I've talked a lot with the different horror directors over the years about how we're seeing a resurgence of the intelligent horror film. We're not just seeing slasher and blood and guts, but we're seeing much more intelligent stories. Does that go back to what you said about how you can take more risks because it's a lot more low budget, and consequently the stories and the style becomes a lot more smarter?
It is. I mean, and again, like I said, when you're dealing with a bigger budget movie, I don't want to say dumbing it down, that's not the right word, but you're dealing with middle America. You're dealing with what are the masses going to enjoy and love. And I think when you're dealing with a smaller budget, it's more about what's edgy and cool, what you like, what you think is what you think is interesting, as opposed to what the masses think is interesting. And so what happens is you get some real art out of that. You get some real intense, beautiful, haunting, horrific things out of that. Where again, if it was much more in the line, it would probably be more directing by committee, which lower budget films give you the ability to do it more just kind of on your own.
You mentioned For the Masses, and I think all horror, more so than any other genre, except for maybe sci-fi, has a very, very tight-knit fan base. What do you like about just being a part of the horror community?
It's funny, I was just interviewed for a documentary and I saw the first cut of it called The Horror Crowd, which answers this whole kind of question. We get to live in nightmares, and that sounds horrible, but it's not. It's great. Like we get to create these worlds of ghosts and goblins and things that go bump in the night. I mean, Halloween is my favorite season, and I look forward to it all year. It's every day it's Halloween here. It really is. And it's what a lot of people don't realize is how close everyone in the horror crowd is. From Eli Roth to James Wan to Rob Zombie to Guillermo del Toro, we all know each other, and we talk to each other, and we help each other, and we call each other. And I, for an example, I was just in Thailand shooting the movie, and I was stuck on something, and I emailed Guillermo del Toro, and I was like, "Hey, this is crazy, but do you have a minute to talk?" 5 minutes later, my phone rings, and it's Guillermo. Now he had just won the Academy Award for Shape of Water, and he takes time out of his day to call me. I was battling with the MPA on something, and I couldn't get an R rating, and I didn't want to sacrifice anymore. And I reach out to Rob Zombie, and I say, "Hey, can you help me with something? I'm completely confused on what to do." And Rob walked me through the process, and that is an amazing feeling because it's like everyone is so helpful, and some of the nicest people I've met come out of the horror world. You would think we would be scary and sadistic and worshiping Satan, and that's not at all what it is.
Speaking of worship, this is a good segue. Of course, Saint Agatha takes place at a convent in the 50s, and there's always been a lot of religious allegory in film, but particularly a lot in horror films. Why do you think religion makes a good base a lot of the time for some of the themes that are talked about in these types of films?
Well, I think for me, a couple of things. I hope I don't offend everyone in the world by this, but religion, a lot of what you hear in religion could come across as fairy tales if they were presented in any other method. A man who lives in the cloud, but if you pray to him, grants wishes. A man parts the sea and lived inside a whale. A serpent talked. A bush. I mean, like, there's so many different crazy stories that come out of religion. Yet, as a society, as a civilization, as a world, we believe in it because we need to believe in something. And so I think that when you begin to question religion, when you begin to question the reasons behind things and the motivations, it's fascinating because, looking out my window right now, there's four churches on this street. It is something that is so important and ingrained in our lives. But if you read the Bible, if you go back through history, wars fought over the Bible, torture because of the Bible, killings within the Bible. I think it's ripe with story. And again, nothing is more passionate than when you talk to someone about religion. Talk to three different people about their beliefs in religion, and it brings up such, love, hate, animosity, joy. It ranges all the emotions. And I think that it's scary because it's the unknown. Absolutely unknown. No one single person can claim they have the complete answer to it. And I think that's what makes religion fascinating, and that's why I'm fascinated by religion.
In a film, pacing is often everything, and it is key to a story. And I noticed that in your film, it does move quite quickly. How conscious was that? Was that something that was set up when you were shooting, or did that pacing come more in the post-production and editing process?
Editing, absolutely. Shooting is slow and monotonous, and you never know what you have until you get in the edit room. And then when you get in the edit room, you look at it, and you're like, "Okay, that doesn't work," or "I'm bored here," or "The audience is going to be bored here." So then we begin to introduce the idea of a rapid cutting and montages and all of that. So I would say it's absolutely through the editing process.
Horror films often can be about effects, not necessarily so much this one, but how do you go about setting early on in your process, setting the tone for the specific type of movie you want to make?
You just got to ask what you want the audience to feel. What is the feeling you want them to have in the audience? So something like Repo, I wanted them to just be smiling and tapping their toes and making it really culty and campy. With something like Mother's Day, I want to get under your skin. I want it to be disturbing, and I want you to feel bad and like a voyeuristic, like you shouldn't be watching what you're seeing. I think every movie has that thing that you want the audience to feel. And so you just got to look at what that is you want the audience to feel and then ask yourself, how do I shape a scene around that feeling? And that's how I kind of approach all of my films.
Horror films are notorious for having, you know, B-list, C-list, up-and-coming actors and actresses. But you do have one person that's sort of a name in this production, Carolyn Hennessy. What was it like working with somebody of that caliber?
Carolyn is, she's amazing. And I think that I was kind of joking with you yesterday. I said that when I sat down with Tobin Dell for the first time to talk about the script for Saw 2, he terrified me. He literally scared me. Tobin is such an intense, haunting, horrific, just presence, the way he looks at you. I felt the same way when I cast Carolyn. Carolyn is the sweetest woman in the entire world, but you sit down next to her, and she's a scary person. Like, she terrified me. Now, she has become one of my closest, dearest friends after this production, someone that I'll be working with again and again and again. But she just got it. And sometimes actors just don't get it. She just got it. I mean, from minute one, she knew who Mother Superior was, she knew the character, and she knew how to play it. And I was very lucky to have a chance to work with her.
You also had something that maybe some directors consider a challenge, but you directed one of the writers in the film, Sean Fletcher, who I know plays the deputy. As a director, how do you go about directing an actor who is also responsible for the words that you are directing?
It's hard, honestly, it really is. Because specifically in the case of Sean and Sarah and Andy, who are the three original writers of the script, they sat with the script for years, literally years, and developed it and wrote it and tried to, you know, make it their own. And then here someone like me comes in that has a completely, you know, unique vision to maybe not what they were thinking. So they envision a scene a particular way, then I come in and I'm like, no, I want to do it like this. It's always awkward because you want to respect the material, you want to respect what they were going for. But at the same time, like, you've hired me for a reason. So Sean was great. Like, he was completely great and had, was game for everything. But there is that weird, you know, there is that weird thing that you don't want to upset the guy who spent years of his life doing this.
You also, of course, mentioned Sabrina, and not only is she not a native English speaker, but this was her first film. What were there any challenges you found in directing a first-time actor or someone who's making their maiden film appearance in your project?
No. Since Sabrina and I had just worked together on The Tension Experience, which is the most arduous, dense, insane process ever, this was very easy for us. We're very good friends, very, very good friends. So I think for her, she obviously it's an overwhelming thing for her because it's her first movie. She's up against Carolyn Hennessy, and we literally put her through the works. I mean, torture, you know, put her in coffins, make her drink puke, get pregnant, have a child. She went through the ringer. And I bet she did it like a champ. I think she was fantastic in it. But no, she's one of the most prepared actors I've ever worked with. She has a photographic memory, and I've heard about it, never knew what it really was. But it was, you would hand her a piece of paper, she would glance down at it for 30 seconds, and then she'd have every single line, comma, beat, memorized in seconds. So I think I was very lucky to be able to bring her on as production. I think she did great in it.
Well, you alluded to earlier some of the scenes, the torture scene, the one where Catherine has to eat her puke. I think for me, the most challenging scene I had to watch was when Mary was being buried alive and then she had the food spat on her. I'm curious as to, for you, what the most difficult scene to film was.
Well, that one was one of them, and it had to do with the fact of the coffin. That, you know, we shot, due to the aspect ratio we shot in, the coffin itself, it never really felt claustrophobic because we couldn't fill the frame with the coffin. You couldn't just be in the coffin. And how, you know, there was challenges to that because how do you show the coffin is closed and make it feel claustrophobic? And then we had to build, like, false walls. And then it was a very, very, very challenging thing. So I'm not. It was intense. That scene was definitely intense. Specifically, the movie was so low budget. We only had a few locations. Constantly making the film feel engaging and feel, you know, tense in such a limited amount of locations. That was always hard. But again, I've worked with the cinematographer Joe White, who did Repo and did The Barons and 11/11 and Mother's Day with me. So I was lucky to have a great cinematographer on my side to help facilitate that.
We mentioned working with stars, and I know in your next movie that I'm reading about, Death of Me, you get to work with both Luke Hemsworth and Maggie Q. Are you able to tell us anything about that project right now?
Yeah, it's a great film. I'm really excited. We just finished it. Got to shoot it in Thailand, which was an insane experience in itself. It's the story of an American couple who go to Thailand for a vacation, and then they wake up with an unexplained video on their phone of the husband, which would be Luke Hemsworth, strangling and killing Maggie Q, but they're both very much alive. So the rest of the movie is them trying to figure out what the video was, why it happened, and how they're still walking around this island. It's a nasty little thriller, but it's very cool. I was really, really happy with it. We're in the middle of editing it right now.
You mentioned that you got it to shoot in Thailand. For you as a filmmaker and a visual storyteller, what's the most exciting part about getting to shoot overseas, Europe, any foreign country?
I'm sorry, you broke up there. Say that one more time.
Oh, sorry, I was just saying, you just shot the last film in Thailand. For you as a filmmaker and a visual storyteller, what's the most exciting part about getting to shoot in a foreign nation?
Well, I mean, I've been very lucky. I was able to shoot a movie in Barcelona, a movie in Tokyo and Japan, you know, obviously Canada, and now Thailand. It's crazy because they make films differently. Every place makes films differently. And so what I feel like, to me, I'm getting a crash course in, you know, it's continually getting to go back to film school and learn new tricks to be able to add to my repertoire. I mean, obviously you get to see the world, and I get to take my kid with me, and my kid got to go walk around these amazing temples in Japan. And my wife and I get to travel to places we never in a million years be able to afford. But I think it also helps get you out. Like, for me, I work best when I'm outside of my comfort zone. And so being outside of my house and outside of my office, it just creates a whole other dynamic, a whole other world. So I hope I get to keep leaving the country and doing things like this.
As a director, you've worked with a lot of the same actors over and over again in multiple films, like Jay LaRose, Athena Kakarakis, Marty Adams. Does that go back to what you were saying earlier about how close the horror film community is, and that you always just find yourself participating in each other's projects? Or is there something else that made you cultivate these specific relationships?
Well, no, I just like working with people I like working with. So, you know, I've worked with Alexa Vega a bunch because Alexa Vega and I get along, and she's a great actor. You know, I've had Joe White shoot my last 7 movies or whatever because I like Joe White and I like working with him. But I just, life's too short and movies are already too stressful that I just want to work with people that I get along with. And it's fun because I always introduce new people into that stable, and you know, Carolyn Hennessy will now be part of that stable of actors I always go back to. It's just when you find something that works and you find someone that you like working with, just continue to work with them.
Now, I know originally you had a movie called The Desperate, which was sort of turned into Saw 2. But is that project over, or have you ever thought about reworking what your original script was and trying to make that film again?
I would love to try to make it. I've actually joked around with the producer, Mark Berg, about giving me the rights back to it. It's a lot more complicated than that. Because it was based on Saw 2, or Saw 2 was based on that, there's something, it's a rights issue. It's called an underlying rights, or it's the chain of title. So it would be a legal nightmare for me to try to get it back, but it's not impossible. It's such an interesting story, and the movie is vastly different. The Desperate script was so different than Saw 2. I think I just got to keep begging Lionsgate and Mark to give it back to me.
But speaking of that, how, as a filmmaker, what do you think the Saw franchise did for you professionally?
Gave me a platform. I mean, I was 26 years old or 25 years old. I'd never directed a thing in my life. And I was able now to parlay that into 14 other films. So, you know, if I started off in some small indie, I would not have been able to continue to make the movies that I have been for the length that I've been able to make them. So it gave me a career.
Have you, obviously you've made your entire career here in the horror genre, but do you have thoughts about, you know, directing either a comedy or just like a straight drama?
Yeah, I mean, I would like that. I think whatever I do, whatever that is that I do, is going to end up being disturbing. It's going to be, you know, something that's got something that's kind of macabre about it. But yeah, I mean, I would love to do an action or a thriller or something like that. It's a little sidestep from horror. And I think that the death of me is more in that line. It's very much definitely not horror, I would say. The death of me is much more of a thriller than it is a horror film. So maybe that will be the first into doing that. But yeah, I would love to explore other genres.
Well, the film is Saint Agatha. It's a great film. It's not always easy to watch in parts, but I think that's what makes it so appealing. Darren Lynn Bousman, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, man.
Alrighty. Have a good one. Cheers.
Bye.
That was my conversation with director Darren Lynn Bousman. His newest film is Saint Agatha. That does it for me today. My next episode I'm really excited about. We have a feature-length interview with Scream Queen and E.T. actress Dee Wallace, who talks about her work and her career. She's in a new film called Dolls, which has been one of many projects in the works, and it has been described as Chucky versus Dee Wallace. So just tune in for that interview. You don't want to miss it. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Goodbye for now.